The file number is AMA-H1-1328. Getz Glow et al. Versus Brian Ergens. As all parties know, counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. The respondent will have 15 minutes, and finally, appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. We are recording this, and this will be available for audio listening tomorrow. However, our rules prohibit anyone, either the parties, counsel, or observers from making their own recordings, so please respect that. With that, we'll hear for counsel for the appellant, if you could just begin by telling us who you are and allowed clear voice, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is John Westrick, and I represent Brian Ergens, the appellant in this matter. In Minnesota, the homestead law is to be construed liberally. The requirement of occupancy is limited by reasonableness and is also liberally construed. In this instance, we have someone inherited property while they were in prison. They filed a form that says, I intend that this to be my homestead when I am released from prison in the future. And the question is then, is that good enough for him to establish his intent and his occupancy of the premises? I note there was some intimation, I don't know whether it was a hint or what, that there was something improper by my office adjusting the form that Mr. Ergens had filed on his behalf with respect to the homestead exemption. I don't see anything there. I don't know why that was raised, but people change forms all the time. This was not a form that the statute said it has to be exactly in this. There is a Department of Commerce form, but there's actually a program you can buy to adjust those forms, and I adjust them regularly. And so I don't know what's wrong with the form. It's signed. It needs to be truthful. It needs to be there. It needs to accurately reflect what is said. Had I had someone sign a form that was false, I can only imagine what would be said now. So moving on to this, I mean, Mr. Ergens made a very good point to me the other day. I don't know, because I was not counsel below, whether this was stated to the trial court, but you know, in a way, Mr. Ergens does in fact occupy the premises, because when his father died, all of the property that was in the house at the time became his. Automatically, his personal property, he was the sole heir. And so his personal property does, in fact, occupy the premises, even though he personally is in the custody of the Commissioner of Corrections. And so that is something that needs to be looked at.
Well, but I mean, isn't the flaw in that argument? I mean, I live in Minnesota. Let's say, you know, my father dies, a widow, and his property up in, you know, Detroit Lakes, I inherit. And in the interim, you know, because I've gone up there several times, I've left stuff there. But I still have my home in Minneapolis, and I've never occupied once the home in Detroit Lakes. How on earth could I homestead that? I mean, whether I left my stuff there or not, and let's say I've left stuff there for 40 years, so what? I don't think the issue is the incarceration. He's never been there. He's never occupied it. And I think the heart of the homestead is, yeah, we'll give you a break on your homestead if it's your homestead. If it's not, you don't get it. So why on earth would we reverse the district court's decision in this case, Mr. Westrick?
Well, I want to go to your example, because I don't think your example is fair to Mr. Ergens. You have a home in Minneapolis, as you said. That's your homestead. And I always tell clients who want a double homestead that it's like, what is that, Garby O'Deal or Darby O'Gill? I can't remember which. And the little people, if you make a fourth wish, you lose the other three. And if you have a second homestead, if you declare two homesteads, you lose them both. And so the difference with yours is that this is Mr. Ergens' homestead. The prior property he inherited has already been sold as a judgment, and he raised no homestead issue there. So in fact, for us to say he couldn't do it, I mean, I doubt that the Department of Corrections would have given him a furlough so that he could go to the property, stay there for 3 days, and then come back and continue to serve his sentence. Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, can you cite us to any case law that supports your proposition that intent to physically occupy a property in the future satisfies the occupancy requirement of the homestead statute?
No.
All right. So what you're asking for is a change in law?
No, what I'm asking for is a liberal interpretation of the law, because the law,
and your liberal interpretation has, it's an issue of first impression.
The final result may well be, I'm not sure, but the rule of law is not. The rule's been that occupancy is limited by reasonableness and is liberally construed by this court's decision in, if I pronounce it right, Vickery.
Okay. But we agree that we don't have any case law saying reasonable occupancy includes intent to occupy in the future as opposed to current or past actual occupancy.
That is correct. Okay. Though I would suggest that the fact that all of his personal property is there means he is in some way occupying the premises, though he personally is not there, since it's his intent to be the homestead. If you don't do that,
you know, let me tweak my hypothetical. All right. I'm in New York. Okay. That's where my home is. But you know what? I'm going to move to Minnesota and move into that house that I inherited from my father. But you know, I'm not going to do it now because the housing market is bad in New York and, you know, I can't refinance and it's too expensive. But, you know, I'm coming. I mean, I like Minnesota. I've always liked Minnesota. I'm coming. And so at some point, I'm going to be there. Do I get to homestead the property in Minnesota under that scenario?
Maybe. It depends. Are you homesteading a property in New York? Because, again, you can't have two homesteads. Are you registered to vote in New York? Is your driver's license in New York? Is your car, if you have a car in New York, which I know many people don't, is your car in New York? Are you really a New Yorker or are you just a Minnesotan? Are you like the gentleman who is running for Mr. Kristof, who's running for governor in Oregon and says, I've just moved here, but my family's been here for a long, long time to establish.
Well, you know, I wouldn't cite that case. He lost.
I know that he lost, but we have to talk about these things, because in that instance, it's not liberally construed. Here, the Supreme Court has told us we liberally construe the homestead exemption. And that it says if there's going to be a connection to the community such that in the future they will meet their social obligation to be self-sustaining, if this will do that, then we liberally construe it for that.
Doesn't the law say there is a community connection, not there is going to be a community connection? I mean, it really comes down to future tense and the fact that your client cannot, even if he wants to, physically occupy the property at the time. That's the difference between this example and Judge Connolly's example. So it seems to me what you're really asking is some sort of extension of what constitutes a reasonable interpretation of the occupancy requirement to consider individuals who cannot legally occupy the property.
Correct. And that would be in line with what our Constitution, in fact, says, which says that a reasonable amount of property shall be set aside and shall be exempt from creditors. And so, I mean, these things all dovetail together. And reasonableness means Mr. Ergens can't leave prison. And then when he gets out, he's a convicted sex offender. He's a convicted child sex offender. And he's going to have this whole host of rules that require where he can and where he can't live, all sorts of municipalities. And what we're telling him is, hey, too bad, buddy. It's time to get a hut by the beach or something. All I'm saying is if you don't do this, then what happens is people like Mr. Ergens, they go back into this cycle and they never, ever, ever can have a house. They never, ever, ever can do this where they have one right now. That when we look at this statute, we have to look at it in light of not only the Constitution, the state Constitution, which doesn't mention occupancy, but we have to look at it in light of what the Supreme Court said in Denzer, and what this court said in Vickery. And then we need to look at also the fact that the Supreme Court made very clear in one of the cases about the fact that, you know, bad people get the homestead exemption just like good people. No justification.
Mr. Western, what if, let's say, if they say we agree with you, and you know, and he's acting in good faith. I'm, you know, I'm going to occupy it. And, you know, as soon as I get out, I'm there. And let's say he gets out and says, you know, I changed my mind. I don't really want to move there for a variety of different reasons. Does he have to pay the homestead exemption back, you know, the break he got for those 12 years? Does he have to pay it back because he never moved in or he changed his mind?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know how the tax works because I only have a homestead. So I don't know. I don't know whether he would have to do that or not. That's the question. So I don't know.
So we would always be relying on someone's intent. You know, I intend to occupy it sometime in the future.
Yes. If you're in prison, or if you're in the nursing home, or if you're there, that's not a great leap. I mean, you know, the Eustace case makes clear that when you're in the nursing home, now, of course, in Eustace, I acknowledge she had the person had lived in the house before, but it was like, no, it's my intent to come back. I don't have a choice. I've been dispossessed of this. And so I rethink that part of this is when you understand the parameters that we have to do this. Yes, Your Honor.
The Roseville home, did he own that or rent it? Who owned that?
He inherited that.
Okay.
And
that's where he had lived, and that's the address that was on his driver's license.
No. No.
Where did he live? What was on his driver's license when he went into prison?
He lived in a house with his divorced, where he had lived with his divorced wife and the victims in this matter in somewhere in Wright County, at Buffalo, I believe. But it might. But no, the Roseville property was never a homestead either. And he never declared that as a homestead. As a matter of fact, after he inherited this property from his father, the choice was made, we can only homestead one. Which one are we going to homestead? And the decision was to do that. I do just want to point out as an aside, I don't know how important it is, that the judge's finding in paragraph 5 below was wrong as a matter of law, that he did not become the owner of the property until he received the deed of distribution. That's just erroneous. I argued that case a couple of years ago.
But the district court judge recognized that even if we set that aside, it doesn't change his reasoning, which is he has never occupied the property.
Right. That's the number 6, which is where I'm talking about that I don't know whether or not a personal occupancy by him as a person, as opposed to, as he pointed out, I've always occupied it and that my things are there, whether or not that would be sufficient.
And okay, so the legislature has provided a means by which somebody who does not currently occupy a property, but did so in the past, can maintain an existing homestead exemption, but has not provided a means by which somebody can prospectively establish a homestead exemption based on intent to occupy the property in the future.
I think that's a fair statement.
Okay, so we've got the legislature has covered current actual occupancy, past actual occupancy, but has said nothing about occupancy in the future.
That's correct.
Okay.
But the Supreme Court has said, and this court has said previously, that we do this within reasonable parameters. But
that case law having to do with reasonable parameters involves cases in which there was former actual occupancy, yes?
Yes, because otherwise we wouldn't be writing on a blank slate.
So what you're asking for is new, which is to take that case law saying define occupancy reasonably, and saying reasonably includes a situation where someone intends to occupy the property but cannot do so. And I won't say through no fault of their own, because those aren't the facts.
He can't occupy the property because he can't occupy the property, but he's in the Huskow.
Well, he can't occupy the property because he was convicted of crim sex and he's in prison.
Correct. And that's his fault. So that's the point. I have a minute left, but unless there's more questions, I will yield my time to my learned friend. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Gerald Von Kor, Frankie Noonan, and I represent the respondents in this case. This case is governed entirely by the actual language of the statute that governs establishment of homestead, and that would be section 510.01. And it's very clear, the house owned and occupied by a debtor as the debtor's dwelling place shall constitute the homestead of the debtor. And there are a line of cases, old and new, that make it quite clear that the occupancy and the residence as a dwelling place are critical to the establishment of the exemption. Legislature has known about those interpretations. They are the key interpretations of the homestead exemption and has made no effort to change or amend the law. The list includes the old case of Quell versus Peterson, where the court said that the terms occupancy and residence have invariably been construed to as meaning the actual occupancy of the premises. A newer case, Eustis versus Jewison, to qualify for protection under section 510.01, the debtor must own and occupy the residence as their dwelling place. An old case, Clark versus Dewey, where the Supreme Court says that actual occupancy, as distinguished from mere possession, is the prominent idea associated with the word homestead. That language, the Clark v. Dewey language, gets replicated in the 1981 case, Muscala versus Wirtz, where the court quotes that language and then says, but even with a reasonable construction of the homestead, there must be actual and continued occupation of residence and upon the premise in order to constitute homestead. The bankruptcy court, Eighth Circuit, has recognized that in the Mueller case. And there are a series of cases that specifically say that intent to occupy a homestead that is not being occupied, that is where the debtor says, buys land and says, I'm going to move there, or owns a home but has not moved there, that intent is not sufficient. The Liebetrau versus Goodsoul and Hayward cited in Quell is exactly that case. There's a older case, Kelly versus Dill, 1877, where the court takes on this question of intent. And the Muscala case and the National Bank of Mankato versus Wilson, they all contain that language. The fact that you want to live there, that you've even bought the property, intend to live there, but haven't moved in, none of that is sufficient because it is driven by the legislature's choice of the owned and occupied as the debtor, by a debtor, as the debtor's dwelling place. And so there's just really no room. What's really being asked for is an amendment to the statute. You see, yes.
It seems to me what's really being asked for is a change or a new statement of law based on circumstances where the person, you know, unlike your example where someone buys a house and hasn't gotten around to moving in, here we have facts where the claimant of the homestead exemption cannot occupy the property, even if he wants to. Should that make a difference?
The rationale for the 510.07 exemption was that a prisoner cannot change their residence. That's the reason that if he owns the residence, and so if you're arguing that, if one argues that it should make a difference, then that argument is made to the legislature. This is an attempt to amend the statute to provide protection to prisoners. And I might say that it's not entirely, it's not at all clear that there are no means for prisoners to make arrangements to have a homestead or to protect their homestead. What was in Mr. Ergen's difficulty was he inherited property with, that he wanted to shield from his family. In other words, in the typical situation, if a prisoner has a home, he has his family there. That's and his family, if his children live there, that becomes the homestead by virtue of the fact that the family is living there. What's going on here is it just isn't really practical or possible for a prisoner to take property he owns and shield it from his own family. If the legislature wants to deal with that, they can, but I doubt that that's likely to happen.
Never say never.
That is my case, Your Honor. I don't know. I'd be happy to have, I've got some time left, but if there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Seeing none, Mr. Westrick, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Your Honors. I do want to point out the language that my learned friend cited there, the Clark v. Dewey language, is that occupancy is the prominent. It doesn't say exclusive. It says prominent. And again, I don't know what occupancy means. I don't know whether or not Mr. Ergen's having all of his personal and worldly possessions or most of them in there constitutes an occupation. Here, the intent isn't just subjective. He wants to go there, but he has things in there. So we've got more than intent. It's not just a, I hope to do this. And I want to point out that the statute, the Eustis decision talks about not just the debtor, but the debtor or the debtor's family. And I'd also point out, because of the obvious requirements that happened here who the victims of Mr. Ergen's crimes were, are his family. And so as a result, he wouldn't be allowed to set up something where his children could live or stepchildren could live in the premises because he's to never have contact with them again. In his old house where his old driver's license was, the divorce meant he could never go there again. And of course, he was arrested and never made bail. So I just want to point out that from our perspective, he inherited this. He intends to be there. His things are there. He's occupied it as much as he can. Unless there's any more questions, I see none. My client and I thank the court for its time and attention to the matter. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted. We will issue.